Earlier this week, the government announced that it is contributing $60 million to help Taumutu Runanga and Wairawa Runanga buy 100 hectares on Kaitore Te Spit, a long finger of land which is ideal for space launches and aerospace testing. Called Project Tawhaki, it's hoped that aerospace opportunities will tap into the multi-billion dollar aerospace economy, as well as ensure that the two Runanga can continue their role as kaitiaki on Kaitore Te and the neighbouring Te Waihora or Lake Ellesmere. Joining me now in the studio in Christchurch Live is the spokesperson for Taumutu and Wairawa Runanga, David Peranara O'Conway. Te rangatira, te David, tēnā koe.
Kia ora, tēnā koe, Julian.
Thank you so much for coming in. Where is Kaitore Te?
Kaitore Te is about 25 kilometres south of Christchurch, just over half an hour's drive. And it's a small finger of land that separates Te Waihora, Lake Ellesmere, from the Pacific Ocean.
Taumutu and Wairawa Runanga, who are they specifically?
Yeah, so both Runanga are representatives of their hapū. So Te Taumutu Runanga represents the hapū of Ngāi Tirua Hikihiki, Ngāti Muki, and Wairawa Runanga represent Ngāti Mako at the respective ends of Kaitore Te, and we've both got shared interests in the spit.
And what are Runanga? How do they fit into the wider Ngāi Tahu political structure?
Yeah, you might consider us the equivalent of sort of district councils. And they look after the whānau affairs, the whānau coming together and having discussions about topics of the day and our response to various things, be they from government, local government, but also the iwi as a whole as Ngāi Tahu.
It's said that Kaitore Te is a whenua tapu. It's a sacred part of land for Ngāi Tahu, particularly for Taumutu and Wairawa. What is the traditional Ngāi Tahu narrative pertaining to that particular piece of land at Kaitore Te?
Aye, so Kaitore Te was our State Highway 1, you might say, back in pre-European days. So, of course, Te Waihora was a lot bigger and had big surrounding wetlands, so one of the fastest routes between north and south was along Kaitore Te. As a consequence of that, it has some of the most concentrated archaeological sites found in the country. There are lots of umu and campsites, but also a number of settlements along the spit, they all provided both transient campsites, but also important places to gather mahingakai from both the sea and the lake.
Before the announcement with the Crown and the arrangement that was made that led to the announcement with the Crown and Taumutu and Wairawa Runanga on Tuesday, who owned that land?
So it's been in various states of ownership, but the parcel, the 1,000 hectares as opposed to 100 hectares, the 1,000 hectares was purchased from Wongan Hills, who was a farming land use and owner of the land. It was previously owned by Bailey's, the Bailey's family, has been in that ownership for a long period. It adjoins some existing land owned by Taumutu Runanga, as well as various parcels of land owned by the Department of Conservation, Environment Canterbury and the Christchurch City Council.
So why was it necessary then to do the arrangement this way, to purchase the land, as opposed to looking at the aerospace opportunities, the other opportunities that exist on the land, given you already, Taumutu Runanga, already had a land holding there?
So we were... I guess for the 1,000 hectares that's been purchased under Project Tawhaki, one of the key issues that arose over the last couple of years has been around the land use that had developed on the land. There were concerns with regard to the modification of the land from a dry land environment that is home to a lot of endemic and special species only found on the spit. So that land use was transitioning from dry land to irrigated pasture, and as a consequence was having, an effect on the Kaitore Te environment. And so part of Project Tāwhaki was about, and the focus in particular at the time has been about how we protect and restore those values.
What are the special species that you're talking about that are on Kaitorete, particularly on Kaitorete, Kaitorete as opposed to other parts of Aotearoa and land in Aotearoa?
Yeah, so the spit is home to one of the largest, most continuous areas of Pengau along the coastal side of the spit. It's also home to the Tororaro, the Mulimbekia estonii, again a stronghold for that species in the country. But the it also has some endemic lizard species only found on Kaitorete, as well as a flightless moth that has evolved over, obviously, millions of years, because of course if you're in a good southerly on the spit and you attempt to fly, one of the things that will happen is you'll be blown into the lake. So those moths have learnt to evolve in that way.
How then are you going to be able to manage opportunities for space projects on an area that has such diverse and unique native species on it? How do you manage through that?
So one of the key focuses of Project Tāwhaki is first and foremost to create a conservation plan and look at our pathway moving forward to restore and rejuvenate the land that's been sort of altered over the last few years. And so that's our first step is looking at the conservation. What's the values we're looking to protect? What are the species that need protection? What are the species that we want to bring back, like the banded dotterel that were there in large numbers and aren't found in large numbers nowadays? And so that's a big focus for going forward. Then it's a question of, okay, what aerospace type activities might be compatible with that? And when we're talking about those activities, we're talking small scale, and if you look at where the aero industry is developing towards, there are some really exciting opportunities that are small scale. They use electric or solar power technology, and so there is some real interesting opportunity as to how those two values, both environmental and development, can sit side by side.
Before we delve more into those opportunities, though, just to come back to the land, because the land was a part of an Environment Court process that had been happening for a fair while in the Environment Court. So obviously there will be questions raised potentially by whānau who are saying, well, hang on, we could be getting ourselves in a bind here because the land was part of an Environment Court process, particularly around those native species like the Tororaro. And now all of a sudden we're the owners and we're looking at potential opportunities that could put that land at risk. How have you responded to those questions that whānau have asked?
So through the Environment Court proceedings, which we were party to as well, we worked alongside the Department of Conservation, Forest and Bird, who took the proceedings. We were all looking for the pathway that could, move us into a direction where we could see the impacts of intensified land use be removed or transitioned over time, but also what other opportunities from an economic perspective could be brought back in its place. And I guess that's one of the challenges for Canterbury and New Zealand as a whole is when we think about the environmental impact of land use, what do we transition to? What is that pathway? And one of those that we're at the point of exploring, and there's been no commitments with regard to what that aerospace activity is, but exploring those with whānau, because to go down that path, we need to now have that conversation. Basically, up until this point, Project Tāwhaki has been all about securing the land and the opportunity, and now it's about engaging with our whānau about how do we align the future management and use of Kaitorete in line with our values.
There have been some interesting comments posted on social media about the aerospace opportunities that could be done on Kaitorete. And I think a lot of this is based on current activity that's happening in New Zealand, particularly with respect to mahia and the impact that those opportunities have had on not just landowners, but the wider rongomai wahine, whānau there. Some of those comments, I think, have come from whānau as well. So what's your response to that particular point, that we could see what's happening in mahia potentially happening on Kaitorete, where whānau could be locked out of access to places like Te Waihora, Lake Ellesmere?
So that's exactly why we've positioned Project Tāwhaki and the joint venture agreement in the way that we have, because it puts our whānau front and centre in the as an equal decision maker in the future of this land. We've known, obviously, since Rocket Lab explored and looked at Kaitorete a number of years ago, we've known that the potential for anyone to come and purchase up this land and undertake this activity was a risk. And as I recall standing at Taumutu when Rocket Lab came and talked to us, is the last thing I wanted to see was that our whānau stand on the shores of Te Waihora and look across at Kaitorete and watch the activity from a distance and don't actually get to participate. So through this JV, what we've looked to do is position our papatipurununga as decision makers in that in this activity, and that way we can hold true to our kaitiaki responsibilities for the whenua. But then also be a decision maker in what that future compatible aerospace activity might look like.
Because I do recall at the time that, as you say, Rocket Lab did make the approach. I think Kaitorete was always the preferred site for rocket launches for Rocket Lab at the time. And the general thrust of the commentary after that was that it was Rocket Lab who said, no, we needed to do more launches, and that's why we walked away. What I think I infer from what you're saying, though, was there was some resistance from whānau, from Rununga, to that proposed venture happening at that time. Is that correct?
Yeah, so at the time that Rocket Lab was here, they were keen to get an operation up and running quite quickly, and their timeframes were quite tight. Obviously, the Rununga wanted to ensure that we went through a meaningful engagement with them, as did a number of the neighbouring landowners to where Rocket Lab proposed to do their activities. And that ultimately ended that at the point where the Mahia Peninsula opportunity was more favourable for the timeframes of Rocket Lab, and so they chose to go there. But at the time, there was a conversation that was still occurring, but it didn't meet the timeframes of Rocket Lab.
Why then is Kaitorete such a good place to be looking at aerospace opportunities? What particularly about Kaitorete makes it such an appealing site?
Yeah, so it has some outstanding opportunities in the sense of the orbital access, but it also has some of the clearest skies from an air traffic perspective left on the planet, but also clear sea space. So when it comes to, if you were launching those types of vehicles, you have all of those key elements that come together from a launch place, but of course that might not be the type of activity going forward. But the spits got a long distance west to east, and so you can, with regard to landing a glider-type vehicle, for example, or an autonomous drone-type vehicle, the ability to be tucked away out in the on Kaitorete provides a great environment from that perspective.
So there is the ability to have a runway of some sort along that long strip of land there.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say a runway, but the ability to land vehicles that are, you know, out of the way of an international airport, for example. So, you know, the ability to land some of the autonomous drone passenger vehicles that are being developed, you know, do land like a helicopter. So
you're talking about WISC, yeah. Formerly Zephyr International, those types of
things. So it's not like you need a great big runway as well. So yeah.
And by orbital, you mentioned orbital. Are you talking specifically about trajectory?
Yes. Yeah.
How do we know? So my understanding is there were NASA might have looked at this a few years back. I read some article that said that in the 1960s there was something proposed and ventured at that time. Are you confident in the fact that this type of activity could come to fruition?
I think we're up for exploring the opportunities. There's been some early investigations as to with the modern technologies now, what Kaitoreti offers, and so that's what, you know, we're about to commence the journey to look into, really.
Who will you work with in terms of assessing viability of opportunity? Who will be a part of that project with you?
Yeah, so that's really our next phase of one of our next phase of work. So I've mentioned the conservation work that will get underway. Another work stream will then be looking at, the developer or development engagements around potential investment or activities, as well as the process of attaining resource consents, those types of things, which will go through normal RMA processes and the likes.
What are the chances that you may have to look at limiting access to places like Te Waihora? I mean, I think of Matua Don Brown going out and getting some pātiki out in Te Waihora. Will there come a time where you might have to impose some kind of regime that might have to limit access at some point?
That will all depend on what activities we decide as a whānau that are compatible. That's a whole conversation and process that we need to work through to get to that point to understand the concerns of whānau. But obviously the ability to continue access to Waihora, our fish basket, as well as the resources of Kaitoreti will remain, you know, important for our whānau. And so, you know, we need to look at how do we bring those opportunities together.
Mm. As a part of the business case, no doubt there was some risk assessments done here. What are the risks in your view?
I think first and foremost, the risk, in the forefront of my mind was the risk of not being involved and not being a decision maker in the development. So by standing back and letting somebody else lead this out provided, you know, a significant risk that we were just, as I said before, mere bystanders and stakeholders that might have been listened to and might not have. So that was key, but I think certainly reaching the balance between how we go about restoring the values of Kaitoreti together with what the development opportunities, you know, there'll be risks associated with that, and I think that's the parts of the process that we have to weigh up, and just the risk in the sense of, does this produce the hauora opportunities for our whānau and is it compatible with our values?
And by that, you're also talking about employment.
That's
right.
Rangatahi
being involved in more technical, high-skilled, highly paid jobs.
Absolutely, you know, that's something that we can see as a real opportunity for our future generations. We've had a number of our rangatahi, both from Wairua and Taumutu, but in the wider iwi, go on STEM education trips to Silicon Valley and various other parts of the world, and they're really excited and engaged in this those new technologies, those new ways of approaching our world, and we see this as an incredible opportunity to position them to realise their dreams and participate in this industry, which has so many facets to it, and we're already seeing the response from our local universities, Canterbury, Lincoln, and other, looking toward this this aerospace sector that that could really transform Canterbury and the wider country.
When I first came into Ngāi Tahu Takiwā, one of the best bits of advice which have stayed with me for a long time, and it's probably applicable to a lot of other Māori communities, is that if you really want to know what people think about something, ask the aunties. What have the tauas of Taumutu and Wairua said about this?
Yeah, so up until last week, the project's been quite confidential because we had to get the sale and purchase agreement across the line. And the elements of the Environment Court proceedings. We held a hui last Sunday with for the whānau from both Runanga to come together. Unfortunately, it was torrential rain, and we didn't get a great turnout, but we're looking to hold some further hui with our whānau to explore, what they think. But those that were there on the hui on Sunday, we're really excited by the opportunity, both the opportunity to restore the values of Kaitorete and having a significant part of the spit now in either the ownership of Ngāi Tahu, the Crown or local government, but also the opportunities to create jobs, training, employment for our whānau.
And that's right, it's not just about the whānau, is it? Because the Crown is a 50-50 partner, 50-50% partner with Taumutu and Wairua. So how will you engage with the wider Canterbury Christchurch community to bring them on board as a part of Project Tauhok?
Yeah, so we've got a team together with staff at MB, and we're working together to get that that engagement program shaped up. And the JV is also yet to be formally formed, in the sense of the people that will join that JV.
But the wider community will have a chance to be able to engage with and also have their views, I guess, the opportunity to express their views on the project and how they might be involved.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. We'll be embarking on that engagement with that wider community as well.
David, thank you for your time. I just wanted to say, by the way, Tawhaki's a Ngāpuhi tupuna as well. So
he's shared by all iwi, I'm sure, but he's very unique to our story of Tuna. So.
No, fair enough. Thank you, David, for this, and congratulations on the project. Wish you all the best, and no doubt there'll be more conversations with RNZ on Project Tawhaki as it progresses. Ngā mihi nui kia koe.
Kia ora.
That was David Peranara O'Connell, the spokesperson for Taumutu and Wairua Runanga, talking about Project Tawhaki.